Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Antidepressants is what we talk about this hour of the program. There are so many people taking antidepressants. One of our guests cites this number that antidepressants account for over $19 billion in annual sales. And there are millions of people who are taking antidepressants. Our guest the first half hour says that we have kind of a trial and error approach to prescribing antidepressants, not only for depression, but also for related disorders. Robin Moranz Hennig will join us in just a moment. Later in the hour, the author of The Emperor's New Drugs, Exploding the Antidepressant Myth. He is a professor of psychology, lecturer, and associate director of the Placebo Studies Program at Harvard Medical School, and a professor at the University of Plymouth in the UK, author of that book. And he thinks that antidepressants are not worth very much at all for just about anybody. We'll be welcoming phone calls this hour. I have a feeling because so many people are taking antidepressants, some of you will find that they have been helpful, that we're going to get a lot of calls this hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, and the email is talk@wpr.org. Robin Moranz Hennig is a journalist, an author, and a science writer. She has written a number of books, 9 books. Her latest, we're going to have to talk to her about this. It's coming out later this year. Her most recent book was Pandora's Baby, about the early days of in vitro fertilization research. We need to talk to her about this. The article that she wrote in Scientific American for this month is Lifting the Black Cloud. Existing antidepressants leave a lot to be desired. They can take weeks to start working and they fail many people. Researchers are scouting for better options. Robin, thank you so much for joining us for this discussion.
Happy to be here, Kathleen.
First, let's talk about the enormity of the population taking these drugs. A little bit about the history, Robin. When did they hit the market? How many people are taking the drugs, and how varied are the drugs? Do we have lots of different antidepressants?
Well, you know, it was really hard for us to find numbers about exactly how many people are considered depressed. I think it's about, I mean, we saw very different estimates. We came up with about 15 million, which is an awful lot of Americans.
Mm-hmm.
The main kinds of drugs that are being used now are the SSRIs, the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors like Prozac, or something related to that, SNRIs, that not only work on serotonin, but another brain chemical, norepinephrine. And that doesn't really work for everybody. It seems like, you know, the argument about Prozac and all those related drugs is that they're miracle cures, but it turns out they're really not.
You talk in the article about how, and I know a number of people who are taking antidepressants. I took them at some point, too, a few years ago after I was very sick and very, very depressed. But so many people talk about, trying this drug and it doesn't work, and then they have to try another drug and it seems to work well for them. Why is there such a trial and error, as you call it, approach to this?
Well, each medication has a slightly different effect on a slightly different brain system. And I guess the thinking is that not every form of depression or not everything that results in depressive symptoms is caused by exactly the same brain defect or brain chemical problem. So you have to kind of try out different formulations, different combinations, so that sometimes your serotonin might be increased and other times you might need dopamine to be involved. And there's just so many chemicals in there, and it can be so individual. In addition, I mean, some of the other problems are that even when they do work, they tend to take a very long time to work. And for people who are profoundly depressed, that period of waiting for the drug effect to kick in can actually be very dangerous because there's a high suicide risk.
And how long do people have to wait?
Usually about 2 to 6 weeks. It can be a long time. I mean, part of the reason is that some of what's happening is that new brain cells are actually growing. There's some evidence that some regions of the brain, like the hippocampus, are actually smaller in people who have depressed symptoms. And so you have to somehow boost the actual cells, and that can take a while.
Really? Parts of the brain are growing.
Well, you know, our brain cells grow sort of all the time. We originally thought, I mean, when I was in school, we were told you never get new brain cells. You just lose them as you get older.
Right.
But brain cells can grow, and connections between them can grow in response to how they're used. This is a whole other field.
Really?
That's not only about depression, but just about what they call plasticity of the brain, how it actually does respond and change based on what you learn and how you use it.
You write that investigators are aiming to find faster-acting antidepressants, and they've been studying compounds known to be lightning-quick mood lifters. What are those?
Well, some of them are, I mean, they're lightning-quick mood lifters, but they have all sorts of other complications, which is why right now it's provocative findings, but it's not cure. I mean, one of them is a drug called ketamine, which is actually used as a recreational drug of abuse, but it very quickly relieves depression. I mean, it has all sorts of other problems. I mean, it's also like on the market for real reasons. It's an anesthetic, I think, used in operations. But mostly it's an abused drug, and if you use it too much, you start to get hallucinations and all sorts of other problems. So what the scientists are doing is looking at ketamine to try to figure out what about its mode of action can be, you know, copied in a safer drug. The other drug that's on the market already that seems to have a pretty profound, rapid antidepressant effect is scopolamine, which people take for motion sickness.
I knew
it. Seems to increase, lift your mood.
Huh. If people notice that, who are just taking it for motion sickness, and all of a sudden they feel really good?
Well, I'm not sure if that's the way it was discovered, but maybe. I mean, that's how so many of these new drugs are found, is that they're used for some other purpose, and then people find that it has some surprising other effect.
Mm-hmm. What is the problem with all of this? Is that we don't know how depression affects the brain, or we don't know what depression is, or it just seems like a morass in some ways?
Well, I think the biggest problem is that it's not just one thing. It's very likely not just one thing.
I see.
So you try what you have, they stop working. Or in a particular, you know, a big subset of people, about a third of people do pretty well for a little while, and then, I don't know, I guess they develop some sort of a tolerance, or for one reason or another, it doesn't work anymore.
So they have to try something else which may work, or is that an indication that your time is up with antidepressants and nothing will work?
Well, I think that's when they start doing the whole trial and error thing. You know, I mean, one person likened this to feeling like a dartboard, that they just sort of throw at you whatever medication is available. And for some of them, changing to a different drug will lead to some sort of relief, but there's also a subset of depressed patients who have what's sort of called treatment-resistant depression. There's nothing yet on the market that can help them.
Mm-hmm. And what about the how severe depression is? Do antidepressant drugs tend to work better for people who are mildly depressed or severely depressed?
I believe that, although this wasn't the scope of my article, so I'm not an expert in this, but I believe that they work better for severe depression. And I think that a lot of the issues that you're going to talk about in the next half hour about the placebo effect relate mostly to people with mild depression.
Mm-hmm. And I must ask you, because I saw that 60 Minutes piece, which prompted the conversation, then we read your article, and the placebo thing just kind of knocked me out. Do you think that this person is onto something, or what do you think of his research?
Well, I think the placebo effect is very powerful. And, I mean, scientists have known about it for a long time, and that's why they design their clinical trials to actually compare how a new drug does in comparison to a placebo, not in comparison to nothing. Because sometimes just giving a pill itself is going to make people feel better, at least for a while. I mean, I think that I think there's got to be some sort of chemical involvement in many of these illnesses as well. But at first, just taking a new drug can make somebody feel a lot better.
Mm-hmm. And what about the testing that goes on for all of these drugs? Is it quite thorough?
Yes, it's very thorough. I think a lot of pharmaceutical companies are getting frustrated, though, because it's hard to come up with new formulations that are they're actually going to be effective or differently effective from what's already on the market. The potential is gigantic for, you know, for coming out with a new drug that really can help millions of people. But many drug companies have been sort of forsaking investigations into psychiatric drugs because it's so uncertain and so costly. I mean, to see whether it really makes a difference, you need big trials that go on for a long time.
Well, they can afford it, can't they? Our next guest will say.
I think they can afford it, but, you know, yes, they can afford it, but it's, you know, it's very expensive, and it can take a long time. I guess it's considered some sort of a, you know, trade. You invest a whole lot because the payoff can be gigantic.
Right. Every now and then you hear of a drug that's this miracle antidepressant. I and a lot of friends were on the same kind of drug a few years ago that everybody said there are very few side effects. This is the drug of our time. This is absolutely marvelous. How many tests are going on to find a drug that will work for everyone? Does that look at all promising with any of the research that you have done? And is there a drug that fits that bill better than others that's on the market right now?
Well, from what I've seen, the investigations aren't right now, at least, looking for the drug that's going to cure all depression. I think mostly what's going on that was exciting was small companies or university researchers who were looking at one aspect of depression and hoping to address that particular mechanism that could lead to depression in a subset of depressed people. So, for example, there was one line of inquiry that was going on at Cornell Medical College that involved actually putting in an implant in the brain and having a sort of an electrical charge that would stimulate that region of the brain, not through medication, but through physically stimulating it. And that's very intriguing, you know, and a whole different way of thinking about what depression is all about.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to some phone calls. We have many of them, actually. We're talking about depression this hour of the program and asking the question, does anti-depression medication work? Do antidepressants work? And we have two guests. Our guest, the first half hour, has written a very long piece and very scientific piece about what's going on in terms of looking at drugs, maybe some new things that may work, why it is that it's so much trial and error. Robin Morantz Hennig, the article is Scientific American March issue. Later in this hour, we will speak with the author of The Emperor's New Drugs, Exploding the Antidepressant Myth. Here's our number, 800-486-8655. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Start our calls with Matt in Middleton. Hi, Matt.
Hey, good morning. When I was a teenager, my early high school years, grade school, my parents had put me on sertraline. Most people know as Zoloft. It seemed to help for a short amount of time, but what I noticed is that instead of being sad, you really had no emotion. It was almost to the point where I felt like I could do anything and not have any consequence to it. And I did note what your guest said, that after about a year and a half on that, it didn't seem to do anything anymore. And I found that you know, I was seeing a psychologist or a psychiatrist at the time, and I found I got more benefit from a biofeedback. You know, he would help me to work through what my stressors actually were. And once I could identify them, I found out I didn't need it anymore. And as I got older, and I'm now 35, I find that when I'm having down patches, it's usually vitamins that help the most. Vitamin D and B work almost as well as what the sertraline used to do. But I find I don't have the loss of emotion or empathy that it seems like you get with many of the drugs.
Robin?
You're raising a lot of issues there. One is that when you kind of lift a mood or try to lift a mood, sometimes what you do instead is sort of flatten all moods. And that is something that a lot of people complain about with all sorts of psychiatric drugs, with lithium for bipolar disorder or with Ritalin for ADHD. And so I've heard that complaint before, and I empathize with it. And the second issue then is what might work better or instead. And there have been studies that indicate that talk therapy, you know, going to a psychologist or a psychiatrist and talking through your problems can work just about as well as medication can. And the best combination seems to be medication plus talk therapy. And some of these other issues that you're talking about, using biofeedback or vitamins, that can help as well. So much of it is individual, and doctors would probably also say, though, that if what you were experiencing on Zoloft was this flattening of your emotional state, that maybe you might have been able to try some different medication. But, you know, doctors are much quicker to send you over to another pill than to say, go try biofeedback.
And is there, when you find the right pill, the more you think about it, the more this is just, what a labyrinth here. When people know they're on the right pill, do they immediately notice a difference or not? So if you maybe are on medication number 3 and your moods aren't flattened, but you feel much better about your life, do you know it? Or do you think
that pill number 3 is working for a little while, because so many of these antidepressants do take a while to work.
Right.
You might know that, for example, if one of the side effects, which is common, is low sex drive, you might know that your sex drive comes back. Or if one of the side effects is weight gain, which is also common, you might notice that it's easier for you to lose weight. But the other problem is that going off these pills can often have their own rebound effect. And, you know, a pill that sort of made you feel a little bit less depressed while you were on it, if you go off it too abruptly, some of them can lead you into a tailspin. So, you know, as you say, it is like a labyrinth. I mean, once you sort of get into this this medical wheel, kind of, there's a lot of trial and error.
Right. Thanks, Matt, so much for the call. Jeff in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I'm a recovering alcoholic. I've been sober 22 years now, and I've been taking antidepressants for 20 years. And I would not have been able to do sobriety without them. There's kind of a myth that antidepressants take away all of your depression. They don't necessarily. They act like, in my case, a net. They keep me from going too far down. And they also provide a sort of a calming effect in a person's mind, sort of take the edge off a little bit. So a person, I can still get depressed, but the antidepressants sort of act like a net, keep me from going too far.
Yeah, that's very interesting, and that's kind of, I guess, the ideal situation that people are looking for. Not that it flattens you or that it keeps you from getting either feeling good or feeling bad, but just that it protects you at some level. I mean, this idea of it as a net is a very useful image.
Yeah, and I still can feel my feelings through them.
But that would suggest to me that you're on the right medication, and maybe Matt was on the wrong medication.
So don't take my meds away.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for the call, Jeff. Mike in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. This is an interesting talk. I'm a retired physician, and also have been treated for depression. And when I was treated, I was on drugs for, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 years. And my psychiatrist at the time told me I would have to be on them for the rest of my life. That was 6 years ago. I stopped the meds on my own. After doing research, and I've found in my own research that there's little, if any, evidence that has proven that antidepressants are effective, more effective than placebo. They have significant side effects, which I had, and I found by going to the psychiatrist, I wasn't really monitored for the side effects. At one psychiatrist, my blood pressure rose astronomically high, and he wasn't taking my blood pressure. I found that on my own by taking my own blood pressure. The other one, I gained 25 pounds. I think that there's a lot of marketing for these drugs with, I believe, little proven efficacy. That's my comment. If you want, I can stand in line to answer any more questions.
All right, Mike.
Well, I'm curious about, while you were on them for 3 years, did your mood change at all?
They helped me minimally. I would say I don't know, because I still had problems with feeling depressed, and I haven't been on them for the past 6 years, and I feel better certainly than when I was on them. I don't have the side effects. And I think, you know, there was an extensive review at the time that I was taking. It might have been in the Atlantic magazine or the New Yorker, where a fellow, I think he was based in Massachusetts or New York City. He was a reporter, and he did a very thorough analysis of the literature, and that prompted me to do my own research. And when I went to the psychiatrist, I found that the way they put you on pills is, well, one pill you have a side effect, like one of them I had diarrhea. He would go into his closet and pull out the samples for the next drug. There was absolutely no rhyme or reason as to which drug, why it was placed on that drug. It's, well, let's empirically start you on this, let's start you on that. And I have found in my own personal situation that vigorous daily exercise is my best antidepressant.
Well, that has been shown, that vigorous daily exercise does all sorts of things.
It sure does.
Your brain, and plus it's good for you just physically.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, I can see that as something that works for you. I think that what we're hearing from everybody who's calling is that not only are the antidepressants themselves kind of idiosyncratic, but people can find their own best solution. Sometimes that solution is going to include some of the drugs that are out there, and sometimes it's not.
Let me just ask you briefly before we switch guests about gene therapy. You write about this. Is this a possible breakthrough?
Well, I found that one really interesting, and I don't know. It's all of these possibilities are a long shot, but there was a series of research experiments on animals that found a particular gene that was lacking in animals that had what looks like depression in animals, which is sort of a tricky thing to find. And then when they, in animals, put that gene back, they found that those depressive symptoms went away. So there is a possibility somewhere down the line. The problem is that gene therapy itself is very problematic and has rarely had the kind of, gee whiz curative power that people thought it would 15 years ago or so.
Mm-hmm.
But it is one more possibility.
I just wanted to briefly mention, you have a new book coming out that you wrote with your daughter. That's nice.
Right. It's a book called 20-something, and my daughter is 27, so she was the co-author and also sort of the expert, the local expert.
Is it released yet?
It's coming out at the end of the year, in probably November.
Great. All right. Please join us for that with your daughter. I would look forward to that.
That would be fun, yeah.
Thanks. Thank you. Thanks, Robin.
Okay, thank you.
Robin Morantz Hennig, a journalist. Her piece is in Scientific American, the March 2012 issue, Lifting the Black Cloud, which looks at issues of why it's hard to find an antidepressant that works. Why does it take so long for many of them to work? Are there alternatives that we haven't put a lot of research into yet that may be more effective? Our guest this hour says skip almost all of them. They just don't work at all. I saw him as I got to give credit to the 60 Minutes piece because I found it really astounding. The author of The Emperor's New Drugs, Exploding the Antidepressant Myth, Dr. Irving Kirsch, is a lecturer and associate director of the Placebo Studies Program at Harvard Medical School and a professor of psychology at the University of Plymouth, UK, author of the book that I just mentioned. It is remarkable, as he described in his book. Most depressed people will tell you that the most depressing thing in their life is their depression. If you can give that depressed person a sense of hope, then it will help release them from this depression about depression phenomenon. A placebo will instill hope simply by promising relief from one's anguish. And after reviewing data from a number of clinical trials, both published and unpublished, our guest concludes that most of the improvement shown by depressed patients is due to the placebo effect and not to the antidepressants. We'll welcome phone calls for him. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email, use that if you'd like, talk@WPR.org. Professor Irving Kirsch, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Yeah, I was absolutely dumbfounded when I saw you on this 60 Minutes piece, thinking this is a huge industry. There are a lot of people who are on this medication, some who say that they feel much better as a result of it, and you just, you know, said, it's a placebo effect. Is that true pretty much across the board, do you think?
Well, it's true for across the board for different antidepressants, and it's true for about 85 to 90% of the patients that are taking them or prescribed them for major depressive disorder. There are some people who are at very extreme levels of severity of depression, about 10 to 15% of depressed patients, for whom there might be a larger effect, but for the rest, it's primarily a placebo effect.
What is depression? Do you know, and what causes it?
Well, what causes it is a difficult question to answer because we really don't have a complete answer on that. We do know some of the factors that are involved. We know that stressful life events, that especially the loss of a loved one is a trigger for depression. We know that economic hardship is a trigger for depression. When unemployment rates go up, depression goes up. We know that social injustice and discrimination are triggers for depression. We don't know whether there's any real biochemical imbalance at all. The data for that turns out to be very, very weak, and the most prevalent theories that we had, the theory that depression was caused by not having enough of a neurotransmitter called serotonin in the brain, just turns out to be wrong, and at this point everybody knows it's wrong.
Well, if we don't know what exactly causes it, and if there is not a biochemical imbalance, how in the world do you come up with a drug that treats what you don't know exists? You don't know what causes it, so how do you make it better?
Well, people came up with this drug without having any idea of how the drugs worked. In fact, they developed their theory about this neurochemical imbalance on the basis of what seemed to be the fact that the drugs worked. That is, in one case, it was tubercular patients. Patients with tuberculosis were given a drug to treat tuberculosis. One of the side effects seems to be a sense of euphoria and well-being. And so they said, let's try it with depressed patients. And it seemed to work. Of course, they didn't have any placebo control, so they didn't know why it worked. It seemed to work. And then they looked at, what does this chemical do? Well, this chemical seems to affect neurotransmitters. Maybe that's what causes depression. It wasn't that they knew what caused depression and then got a drug for it. They had a drug, and they tried to figure out what caused depression on the basis of that drug. But it turns out, as we've seen in looking at the clinical trial data, that most of the effect that you get when you give the drug is not due to the chemicals in the drug at all.
Huh. Tell me about the placebo controls, the studies that you have done.
Okay, now I didn't do placebo-controlled studies. What I did was to analyze the data from the placebo-controlled studies that the drug companies did.
Okay.
I went to the Food and Drug Administration using the Freedom of Information Act, And my colleagues and I obtained from them the data that the drug companies had sent them in the process of getting approval for their drugs. And we analyzed those data. So it's the very data upon which the drugs were approved by the FDA, and it was the data produced by the drug companies that we looked at, and that's where we saw how small the difference between drug and placebo was.
So, and you found essentially that the drugs haven't proven to be much more effective than a simple placebo, which is a pretty remarkable finding.
Yeah, we did find that people got better. So that's one thing that you need to understand, is when you gave people the drugs, they improved on average by a substantial, clinically meaningful degree. The surprising thing was that they improved almost as much when they were given the placebo instead of the drug. So that the difference between the effect of the placebo and the effect of the drug was very, very small and not enough to be clinically meaningful.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did we get to a point then that we have millions and millions of people taking these drugs, if, you know, a placebo would work just as well? How did that happen?
Well, first of all, people did not know. Some people knew. I mean, the FDA knew and the drug companies knew, but physicians did not know that there was that large a placebo effect in the treatment of depression. They didn't know how small this difference was. And that's because the pharmaceutical companies only published some of the data, some of the trials that they had done. 40% of the trials conducted by the pharmaceutical companies were never published. And so physicians and researchers had no way to know of their existence and what they said. And so then a physician knows this drug has been approved. It's been approved for the treatment of depression. The physician has no way of knowing about the negative trials. The physician gives it to a patient. The patient gets better. The physician says, oh, I gave my patient the drug. It gets better. Obviously, the drug works. Not knowing and not having any way to know that it wasn't the chemical in the drug that was making the patient better.
Huh. And how could the FDA allow widespread distribution of these drugs on the market, knowing what they knew?
Well, they have a criterion for approving antidepressant drugs, and that criterion is that you have to have two clinical trials showing a statistically significant benefit for the drug over the placebo. Now, in order to get those two trials, the drug company might run 5 trials or 7 trials or 10 trials. The negative trials don't count. The FDA only looks at, are there 2 positive trials? If there are 2 positive trials and 5 negative trials, the drug will still be approved and is then marketed, and the FDA approves labeling, which doesn't mention the existence of the negative trials at all.
Mm-hmm. Going back to those people who are experiencing major depression, I think I'm getting what you're saying, that those people may be taking drugs that will be more effective for them. Is that generally true? And if so, why would that be the case, that these drugs will work for that kind of depression?
Well, first of all of the patients that I'm talking about are people with major depression, major depressive disorder. And it's in major depressive disorder that you get a very small difference.
Oh, I see.
When you talk about where you might be getting a larger difference, you're talking about 10 to 15% of the most severely depressed people out of those that have a major depressive disorder.
And what about people who have other levels of depression, mild, a little bit more severe than mild? Is it totally ineffective for those people?
It seems to be totally ineffective for people with mild depression and with moderate levels of depression. With severe depression, you get a small benefit for the drug over placebo. In most cases of very severe depression, it's still a very small benefit. It's only at the very extreme levels of depression that you may be getting a true drug effect that has some clinical meaning to it.
Do we know why? Do we know what happens in the brain or what happens chemically that would allow it to be effective for those people?
No, we don't know why. We've never known why these drugs work, and as it turns out, mostly it's because of the placebo effect, but we've never known. We still don't know, and one of the things that's really puzzling about it is there is a very diverse group of drugs that all seem to have the same effect. Let's take the effect of drugs on serotonin. The most commonly prescribed are these selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. They're the ones that are supposed to increase the amount of serotonin in the brain. Now, there's an antidepressant that is a selective serotonin reuptake enhancer. It's supposed to do exactly the opposite. It's supposed to decrease the level of serotonin in the brain instead of increase it, and yet it has the exact same chemical effect, a clinical effect, rather, as the other drugs have. It doesn't seem to matter what the drug is doing in the brain. It seems to have the exact same effect on depression.
Let's go to phone calls. Rachel in Madison, our first caller. Hi, Rachel.
Hi there.
Hi.
I did hear the special on 60 Minutes, and I think it's really interesting and really important work, and I have been surprised by the large number of people on antidepressant and it seems possible overuse. But I also did want to share my experience. I had pretty severe postpartum depression and I tried a whole bunch of different ways of improving with some different natural medicines and exercise and therapy. And obviously, I didn't try the placebo effect, so I don't know if that would have worked. But I do know that when I found a medication that had been successful for postpartum depression in many people, it, at least in my mind, was very effective for me and made a huge, huge difference in my ability to recover and raise my child.
Professor Kirsch.
You know, I wish most physicians would take the kind of approach that you described. That is, try other remedies first, remedies that don't have the risks that are involved in terms of side effects and other risks that are produced by antidepressant medication. Try exercise, try psychotherapy. On average, they seem to work as well as antidepressant drugs. Save the drug as a last resort. After you've tried other things and they don't work, if nothing else works, try the drug. And if it works for you and doesn't produce intolerable side effects, great.
Our guest the previous half hour talked about the most effective form, and you would take issue with the drug part of this, but that talk therapy is an extremely important part of lifting depression. Another gentleman called, who's now in his 30s, who as a teenager was put on Prozac, I think, and he found that biofeedback worked for him. What about other ways to lift depression? Is there something to biofeedback? Is there something to talk therapy?
Well, certainly talk therapy works, and there's a good deal of research on it. There's especially a large amount of research on a kind of therapy called cognitive behavior therapy, which is a short-term therapy. It lasts for 15 to 20 weeks. The short-term results are as good as they are for antidepressants. The long-term results, when you look at things like relapse prevention, preventing people from getting depressed again in the future, are much better for the psychotherapy than they are for the antidepressants. So that's certainly an alternative that works. Physical exercise, as the previous caller mentioned, is something that works for many people, and there's even one study showing that people do better with physical exercise alone than they do with physical exercise augmented by an SSRI, by an antidepressant. So that's another thing that works well. Whenever you get a large placebo effect, it means there are going to be a lot of different treatments that are going to work, and all of these treatments seem to work a little bit better than placebo, just as antidepressants do. The main thing is that they work as well as the antidepressants with much less risk. So all of that is good news, and those are things that ought to be tried first.
Thank you, Rachel, for the call. Jim in Milwaukee.
Hello.
Hi.
Good morning.
Hi.
I have a local example. When I was a child, my family doctor is a Dr. Slatkin from Milwaukee. As a child, he told me he was giving up his practice of medicine in Milwaukee to move to Florida and become a psychiatrist because he emphasized that's where the real profits were in the medical area at that time. Prozac has been extremely profitable for psychiatrists to hand out, especially in the kind of willy-nilly way they've been doing it. So when we had all these mass shootings starting in the 1990s where all the perpetrators were under the influence of Prozac or related psych chemicals, then the psychiatric industry got together and with the Democrat Party to try to destroy the Second Amendment.
We're going way into different areas. I wasn't aware that mass shooters were, many of them, taking Prozac. Is there anything to that, Professor Kirsch?
I don't know a lot more about it than what I've read in the press. There certainly is among young people some indication of an increased risk of suicidal self-harm as a function of taking an SSRI as compared to taking a placebo, and that's led to a black box warning on packages of antidepressants now, warning that an increased risk of suicide is a possible consequence of their use.
Oof. And in terms of the money in this, you cite a $19 billion in annual sales. There's a lot of money involved in this.
Yes, there is. Probably a little less money than there has been because a lot of these drugs are now off patent, so they can be described as generics. But still, it is a multi-billion dollar industry.
Mm-hmm. More phone calls in a moment. Our guest this half hour is the author of The Emperor's New Drugs, Exploding the Antidepressant Myth. Professor Irving Kirsch is a lecturer and associate director of the Placebo Studies Program, Harvard Medical School, professor of psychology at University of Plymouth in the United Kingdom, and author of the book we're talking about. More phone calls momentarily. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. To Rose next from Blanchardville. Hi, Roach, or Blanchard. Hi.
Hi. My concern is for drugs that are given to people who have bipolar. Now, bipolar seems to be a class on its own. I've been checking with psychiatrists and other people that know people that have that, and the swings are very, very high or very, very low. What can be done with people like that?
That's an excellent question, and I have to tell you that I have not researched that area well. And so that what I've been talking about refers to people with major depressive disorder. It does not apply to bipolar disorder, and without having done the careful research that I did with the use of these drugs as major depressive disorder, I would be cautious about saying anything about bipolar disorder.
I wish I could hear more on that particular thing because what I find is that the people who have bipolar are very, very intelligent.
I think there does need to be more research on that, and I think there needs to be the kind of meta-analysis that we did with the antidepressants and major depressive disorder. That kind of research needs to be done with bipolar disorder, with mood stabilizers, and also with the use of antidepressants for bipolar. I know there's some controversy about it, but again, I'm not prepared to say or even offer a strong suspicion about whether you would find similar findings or very different findings. It's a different question, and you can't just extrapolate from the research that I did on major depressive disorder to bipolar disorder. One has to just do the same kind of research and see what the data tell us.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Rose. Dolores in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Dolores.
Oh, hi. I'm sorry. I thought you said Lois. First of all, Kathleen, I want to thank you so much because I've been listening to you every day just about since you've been on air. And I think everything that you put on is just so informative. So I want to thank you for that.
Thank you,
Dolores. If people go off their depression medicine, I think it's a really dangerous. And if people are listening to the show and then decide to go off, I mean, it's pretty scary. I have been on depression medicine for 20 years, and when I did go off for a few months at a time, I became extremely depressed, couldn't get out of bed, didn't want to go to work. I wouldn't go off of those. And my big concern with all this is the whole health care, the cost of the meds. When the meds cost more than your income, I mean more than your rent, you have a problem. We need to continue to explore the cost of the meds that are working, the research that he's doing is fabulous. We need to keep doing that. I'm going to get both books of both guests. I think it's an extremely important issue, and if you talk to any psychiatrist or psychologist worth their salt, they'll say that the number one reason they see their patients is for depression. I worked in social work for a long time, and I worked with people that were suicidal, and I just found that when they didn't take their meds, I was over at their house every day. I did a parenting. I was a parent aide. And I had to make sure that they took them. I said, take them every day with your coffee. Take them with your orange juice. Put them in your sock drawer. Do not go off your meds. So as much as I really appreciate his research, I think he needs to continue to do that. My son-in-law is a geneticist, and we're working on this all the time. And with the serotonin in the brain and the synapses that goes through that, that needs to be continually researched. But my number one really big problem is the cost of the meds.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely ridiculous. The pharmaceutical companies, and we won't even talk about healthcare because I would keep you on this phone 24 hours a day, 365 days a year to tell you the nightmare that I've gone through with health insurance.
Oh, I'm sure. And that's the subject of other shows, that's for sure. What about her point, which came out earlier, Professor Kirsch, and I think you recommend this as well, that you have to be careful about getting off these drugs right away?
Yes, you do. I'm very glad that has gotten raised. Certainly, if you're on an antidepressant, don't just get off of it. Don't just stop taking it. If you are not getting the kind of benefits that you would like, if you're bothered by the side effects, talk to your physician about it. One of the problems is that of withdrawal syndromes. About 20% of people who try to get off of meds experience a withdrawal syndrome, just like getting off of any addictive drug, and they have to get right back on it to get over the withdrawal symptoms. So if somebody does get off it, they need to taper off it under medical guidance. It's one of the problems with getting started with it is that it can develop this dependency. And that's why I would think of these drugs maybe as being a last resort rather than a frontline treatment. If someone has not been treated, if they develop depression, it's probably best to begin with some less invasive treatment, some kind of treatment that has less risk associated with it, and try those other treatments first. Save antidepressants as a last resort when other treatments don't work.
Mm. And what treatment should be tried first, in your opinion?
There are a number of possibilities. One is exercise programs. There are research on the use of exercise programs as a means of combating depression. The outcomes on these programs seem to be as great as the outcomes on antidepressants. And, of course, instead of having negative side effects, physical exercise, has positive side effects,
right,
and positive benefits beyond just helping the depression. So that's one. Psychotherapy is another, and especially well-researched are short-term psychotherapies like cognitive behavior therapy that are as effective as antidepressants in the short run, more effective in the long run because they seem to have a buffering effect against getting depressed again in the future. For people who are mildly and moderately depressed, there are self-help books that are based on cognitive behavior therapy principles. Probably the one that has been studied best in clinical trials is the book by David Burns called Feeling Good, and he's written some other ones I know since then, but it's an excellent book with exercises that help people work through some of the kinds of cognitive processes that help produce and maintain depression. And that can be very effective for many, many depressed people.
Mm-hmm. David Burns, Feeling Good, in addition, of course, to your book, right?
Thank you. Yes.
which is
titled The Emperor's New Drugs, Exploding the Antidepressant Myth.
In just about 15 seconds here, you've really gone right out there and taken some risk and being very public about this. Do you have a lot of people upset with you?
Yes. Yes, there are people who are very thankful and not upset with me at all, and there are, of course, some people who are very upset with me, but that's what happens when you get involved in a controversial area and when you find information that threatens such a large industry.
Right. Yes. Thank you so much for being with us. Our guest this hour, Professor Irving Kirsch, K-I-R-S-C-H, and his book is The Emperor's New Drugs, Exploding the Antidepressant Myth. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the show, and thanks to Rhonda as well for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. I'm sorry we couldn't take all of your phone calls, but we'll do other shows on this issue and related topics.